Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
That's exactly right. You know, the truth of the matter is many sex addicts, they want to get healthy with their wives. And they want to get close. And, you know, the thing about men in general is that sex is a way to make up for all the wrongdoings. Hi there, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am so happy to be with you because we've got an exciting show to talk about. And, you know, it is so natural for somebody who is in trauma to disassociate, to really kind of leave her body. It's not like she knows she's leaving her body, but all of a sudden, as she's hearing information, as she's experiencing life, it's almost as if she's left her body and she's watching herself. Disassociation is an extreme response to trauma. And so today I have an expert who's going to be talking about dissociative identity disorder, which is different. But it can be affected by partner trauma, and partner trauma can affect that. And so I said, hey, I really want to get on the show and figure out how we can learn more about disassociation and dissociative identity disorder. So I've got Rebecca Ray coming on, and she is an expert in the field. And, you know, one of the beliefs that I have is that that's what these kind of podcasts are all about. It's about sharing all the information that you may need to be able to cope better. And, you know, one of the things I know is that when you know more, you cope better. So that's why we do the show, right? And you may have noticed that last week's show did not match up with what we talked about. On occasion, a guest will get confused. You know, there are many, many different time zones. And regardless of the fact that I say over and over and over again, and the instruction sheet says Eastern Standard Time, that can happen. And so that's what did happen. And that's why I filled in for the guest and talked about unleashing your power. I'm really happy that I have that opportunity to have some additional information. So the truth is that I got a lot of responses from that. Many people said, if you're doing a workshop, Carol, I'd like to know more about it. So that workshop is May 1st. It's for the workbook, Unleashing Your Power, Moving Beyond Partner Betrayal. And it is going to be 4 hours from 9 to 1 Eastern Standard Time. And you're going to get not only me, but you're also going to get me and my cohort, my colleague, and my co-author, Christine Turoshields. If you want more information about that, please, 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 contact me by email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. All right. And, you know, I know that you're always looking for things to make yourself feel better, right? Yeah, you want to know. You want to know what's going on. You want to be able to connect. You want more information. And yet sometimes you don't want to connect with your husband. Sometimes it doesn't feel safe. And what do you do when it doesn't feel safe? Well, I'm a big believer in not isolating yourself. So that's when you connect with a partner, sensitive therapist, or coach through APSATS.org, APSATS.org. And that is when you can get into an incredible group with other women that have been through this. And, you know, what they know is that they get a lot of safety and even stabilization when they're in a group and they're talking about what's happened to them. It is such a gift. I cannot tell you. So I want you to know there's help out there from experts, and there's a community out there that wants to be a part of your life. And I love that, when there's a community that wants to be a part of your life. And if you need a workshop, May 1st, 9 to 1, you can email me for the flyer at carol@carolthecoach.com. Now, it is not unusual for women to experience trauma brain when they find out about discovery. And unfortunately, it doesn't just happen at discovery, because let's say it's a year out, the discovery date's coming up, or your anniversary is coming up, and, you know, you go, why is it that I am feeling so crummy? I am not sure what to do, and wanting to sleep all the time, or I don't want to sleep, I can't sleep. And if you look up the criteria for post-traumatic stress, you'd find out that it's very normal to have those kind of responses. Now, I got to tell you, I was doing a disclosure with a couple yesterday, and they did a great job. But in the midst finding out some new information, she called a timeout. And I sent him out because I was the only one doing the disclosure. And when that happens, when I'm working with the sex addict and the partner, everybody in the room knows that I am that partner's therapist first and foremost, right? I want to keep her safe. I want to keep her stable. And so she needed a little bit of time to process what she had heard. I could see it on her face. She was blotching up. Her jaws were clenching. And I said, are you okay? And she said, no, I'm not. And I said, okay, I think we need to call a timeout. And she said, yes, I need to process. I said, do you want us to walk around or do you want him to walk around? And she said, I'd like him to leave. And I said, okay. And so I sent him out into the waiting room, and I said, we will text you when it's time to come back. And she said, I just feel so sick. I feel so sick to my stomach. And I said, well, here's what we need to do. And I gave her a mint. I keep them in the office specifically for those moments. And it was a cinnamon mint. But here's something that you may not know that I know. And that is that the digestive system is the first thing that can put a client back online or take her offline, right? And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to be able to give her a mint so that she could begin to salivate and to secrete juices into her stomach that then grounded and resourced her. It's something so simple. But unless you're trained in trauma and you are trained in partner sensitivity, you may not know. and I explained to her why I was offering her the mint. And I said, you know, this is one of those weird things that is spontaneous. I give you the mint and you feel better. The matter is, she did. We talked about what was so concerning for her. And she said, okay, I'm ready for him to return. And I'm like, yay, we can continue with this disclosure. Because my disclosures, everybody does it differently, but mine last 3 hours. That's the average. And I love it when they only go two. It's easier on the partner, it's easier on him, and it's easier on me. But the truth of the matter is, usually a good disclosure takes at least 2 hours, and then there's the polygraph questions that she asks him and he answers. And then there's some processing that I do with my clients afterwards. And then, of course, I go over the safety plan. This couple lives several hours away, but she was smart enough to have arranged some support in Indianapolis to herself. And so I was so happy to see that she went above and beyond in a situation where, for some of you, there might not be support. You might not know anybody in Indianapolis. She was able to gather that for herself. And you know what? That is what it is all about. It is all about self-care. Intentional self-care. And why? Why do we believe that? Because that's the antidote to this whole situation. It's taking good care of yourself so that that's no easy feat, because oftentimes you're in such a state of disarray that you don't even know what would make you feel better. Now, if you're 10, 20, 30 years into it, you may know what to do, but you may have forgotten what to do. And so, you know, if it were me and I were you, I'd be putting up some post-it notes that said, I will take care of myself. You know, I'm leaning into retirement. I'm 65, and no stopping me yet. You know, I have 2 podcasts. I have over 50 clients. I write books all the time. I'm not stopping yet. But when I don't work on a weekend, I rejoice and celebrate. And I go, this is what retirement is all about. Because for me, it is absolutely extra space for me to just do whatever I want and self-nurture. Read a book, take a walk, pet my puppy. So what would you do if you needed to work on self-care, to nurture yourself, if you will? What would it look like for you? For some women, it's planting things in the garden. For other women, believe it or not, I don't recommend it, but if it's your thing, it's your thing. It's cleaning out a closet. For others, it is painting, dancing, you know, just kind of an amazing opportunity to breathe into life and not to think about what's happened to you. And remember, there is no doubt about it, that when you take good care of yourself, it pays off in dividends towards your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health, your social health, your spiritual health, and eventually your purpose in life. And that's what we know about restoration from this kind of thing. When you get over to the other side of post-traumatic growth, you say to yourself, hey, how can I make a difference in this world? How can I give back? How can I be more engaged? How can I help others? And well, it does not get any better than that, right? I mean, because we want you to help others. Why? Because the truth of the matter is, when you help other people, you at least understand how you moved out of this and preserved your sense of self. And that's really important, right? Preserving your sense of self. I don't know if you could ever see yourself getting through this, but I promise you, if you are with a good professional and if you're doing the right things in terms of taking care of you, you will get through this. That's my promise, my Carol the Coach promise to you. And APSATS was organized as an institute to help train professionals to know what to do. And it's amazing, right? APSATS is an amazing organization. We have trained all these clinicians and coaches as to how to make your life better and to get you through this trauma. And that's what Rebecca Ray is going to be talking about today. And I don't think, Rebecca, I don't think we've ever talked about DID, dissociative identity disorder, on the show. So welcome to the show, and I can't wait to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. How are you?
I am good, and I'm telling you, I mean, just the sound of dissociative identity disorder sounds pretty scary, but you and I both know that, you know, in some ways, that identity disorder started from trauma. I mean, from something that occurred in one's childhood, one's life. And so let me ask you, what is DID? How would you describe it?
All right. So do you mind, before I get started, just to, because of my licensing requirements, I just need to let everybody know that I am Rebecca Ray. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist associate, and I am under the supervision of David Lawson, LMFTS, and I'm licensed in the state of Texas. So I just want to make sure I get that in there before I go on and answer your question.
Absolutely.
So that is a great question. Yeah, what is dissociative identity disorder? Okay, so someone with, and otherwise I'm going to refer to this as DID. Someone with DID is a single individual person who experiences his, her, their self as having separate identities that are autonomous from each other. And so at times, these alternative identities might take over the person's mind, body, and behavior. These alternate identities form as a result of early childhood abuse or traumatic experiences that typically occur in early childhood. So most often, there's a major traumatic event that occurs before the age of five. There can also be multiple traumatic events before the age of five and throughout the child, you know, childhood and adolescence. These traumatic experiences overwhelm the child's natural coping skills, or there is a lack of nurturing, right? So the parental figures are not able to offer the nurturing that the child needs after or during that traumatic event, and it leaves the child isolated and abandoned and needing to moderate their stress alone. And so the child might develop these alternate identities as a way to hold the traumatic memories in separate space to allow the child to engage in life in a normal way without intrusive and overwhelming trauma memories disrupting their development. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You said it so well. And so many of our partners have had previous experiences of betrayal, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional, oftentimes lead to either post-traumatic stress or complex post-traumatic stress. And so you're saying DID is the result of those horrendous things that have happened early on.
Yes, exactly. You got it. Absolutely. And certainly there are a number of people that have this. So it's not uncommon, which is one of the reasons I thought it would be important for us to talk about today.
Well, help us what some of those symptoms look like, you know, so that people can understand what DID really is.
Okay, that's a great question. So the symptoms of DID actually include experiencing two or more distinct personality states. in these personality states, people might behave differently, have changes or gaps in their memory, consciousness, cognitive abilities, and even changes in their sensory or motor functioning. People really lose their sense of self when experiencing these distinct personality states. Additional symptoms of DID include gaps in the recall of everyday events, important personal information, and traumatic events. This memory loss differs from the everyday, ordinary forgetfulness that you and I and everybody else experience, like, hey, where are my car keys? You know?
Mm-hmm.
These symptoms typically cause significant stress for the person and impacts their relationships, job, and other important areas of their life. In fact, research has found that significant psychobiological differences between a person's, there are significant difference between a person's DID alternate identities. What this means is that depending on what alternate identity the person is experiencing in the moment will cause changes in blood pressure, in pulse in the person while that identity is being experienced.
And so do they know that they have two identities?
Not always. I think that's a good question. Sometimes family members are the ones that are able to recognize the identities, or they come into therapy and through exploration with a trained therapist who understands DID, you're able to uncover the identities. But they don't always know that they have them. They may know that they're having notice that they're having this experience, but I think if it's something you've always experienced, you may not know that it's different from somebody else. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if it's who they've always been, they may
mm-hmm.
not know it's different than what other people would experience. And so tell me two things. One is, how does somebody get help for this once they discover that they have DID? And then later on, I'm going to ask you, how did you get interested in this?
Okay. So the place I would recommend going is the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Disassociation. They have a lot of information there for clinicians and just also the general public. And additionally, you can go there and find a therapist that is trained to work with DID. You certainly want to make sure that you work with somebody who either considers this to be a specialty or has supervision, consultation going on as they're learning how to treat the DID and, you know, are interested in the topic and, you know, pursuing learning and education around it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And so was it your desire to know more about trauma that got you interested? Did you know somebody with DID? What prompted you to take on this specialty?
Well, you know, my supervisor that I mentioned earlier, David Lawson, he specializes in this. This is the main thing that he does in therapy. And that's one of the reasons I selected him as a supervisor, because I do work with a lot of complex trauma. And I knew at some point in my therapy practice, and I just had hope that this would happen while I was under supervision with him, I would encounter this. And I have. And so I'm seeking additional training and reading and learning.
And so when you said, I encountered this, and I know we have to be really sensitive. We would never want to expose our listeners to a specific person. But what did mm-hmm. you notice when you were working with these types of clients?
These types of clients will sometimes describe, they realize that they disassociate, or they will notice that maybe they just have really intense emotional experiences that they truly feel completely out of control of. And then it really takes some careful questioning and then further assessment to really comb out, is this what's going on?
Okay, and so now, how does DID relate to betrayal trauma?
Yeah, so DID occurs in approximately 1.5% of the general population. This can be even higher. It can be up to 5% in inpatient settings. So some people who experience, as you said at the beginning of the show, betrayal trauma also have a history of severe childhood trauma that is triggered after the betrayal. There's going to be a small percentage of this population who also has DID. And I think it's important that we talk about this because betrayed partners who also experience complex child in childhood and have DID need a therapist specialized in the trauma-informed treatment of DID and additionally are sensitive to and understand the needs of a betrayed partner.
Okay, and so say a little bit more about that. I mean, what's the correlation there between betrayal trauma and dissociative identity disorder?
Well, as of now, I have not come across any research that specifically says someone with betrayal trauma is going to experience DID, right? Because betrayal trauma is an adult onset trauma, the type of betrayal trauma we're talking about, right? So infidelity within a relationship with boundaries, right? And so
right.
I'm not saying DID is going to occur because of betrayal trauma, but if a betrayed partner has experienced, had that major traumatic life event that happened somewhere between the age of 5 or 6, perhaps has a history of complex trauma through childhood and adolescence, and now, bam, we've had this another trauma that has occurred in adult, the betrayal trauma, they very well may have been experiencing symptoms of complex PTSD, and dissociative identity disorder before the betrayal trauma even occurred. So I just think it's important for us to take into consideration that this could be happening within our client population and just to be aware of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I so appreciate you sharing that information because the truth of the matter is we are the specialists in partner trauma and we don't want to miss something like that. I mean, that's very, very important, you know, to clinically be able to see that. And that's why I was so glad that you described symptoms of DID. So how do those symptoms of DID differ, or how are they similar to symptoms of PTSD?
Yeah, so you're right. People with PTSD can have some symptoms that are similar to DID that include amnesia or forgetting parts of the trauma, dissociative flashbacks, and symptoms of thought and memory intrusion, avoidance, and negative shifts in mood or hyperarousal. So, however, an individual with both PTSD and DID will also experience amnesia for everyday events, dissociative flashbacks that might be followed by complete amnesia for the flashback, disruptive intrusions of the different alternate identity states that disrupt the person's sense of self or agency, and infrequent full-blown changes among the different identity states. It is important that clinicians differentiate between the symptoms of PTSD and DID as they require treatments that share some similarities but have significant differences.
Okay, and so clinically, how are these people treated? I mean, what do you do when you have met the criteria, when you see that they actually have dissociative identity disorder, DID, How is the treatment different for them versus the treatment for somebody who goes through partner betrayal?
Sure. So I'm going to focus here on the specifically on the DID treatment. So DID is best treated in three stages. In the first stage, we establish safety, stabilization, and symptom reduction. Here we address any safety or stabilization issues that include helping the alternate identities act safely. This might include managing disordered eating, addictions, chronic suicidality, and self-harm. Research indicates that approximately 67% of people with DID report a history of suicide attempts, and 42% report a history of self-harm. This first phase of treatment might include safety agreements with the client and alternate identities, skills training, management of those PTSD symptoms with mindfulness, grounding, coping skills, breathing, and medication when necessary. Although I do need to say, DID is not typically treated with medication, but if there's something else going on, that may be necessary. It is also important to assess the safety of children in the home. And if there has been a betrayal trauma, it's going to be important in this phase of treatment that we screen for STIs. In phase two, the focus is on integrating traumatic memories across these alternate identities. Therapy involves working with alternate identities that hold the traumatic memories. Trauma memory processing is carefully planned and scheduled, and the therapeutic interventions might include somatic experiencing, EMDR or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, flash technique, cognitive reframing of the traumatic memory, dialectical behavioral therapy, and sensorimotor psychotherapy. And efforts to encounter shame and guilt is important in helping the client recognize adaptive responses they use to cope with the trauma as they experienced it. You know, there's important to do some strengths work as well there. And it's important that the trauma memory work not dominate the work session after session. This can become overwhelming for the client and also for the alternate identities. The therapist has to be ready to return to phase one work. So that's that very basic safety and stabilization to manage the symptoms experienced after trauma processing. And it's important to note that EMDR therapy might need to be modified and is recommended only when the client is stable, has adequate coping skills, and enough internal cooperation among the alternate identities. And EMDR should only be done by a therapist also competent to treat DID. Do you have any questions there before I move into phase three?
No, but I love that you're breaking it down into the three phases because obviously it's different in all three phases. And sometimes in working in phase two, you got to go back to phase one, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think in that, it's similar to the way we work with betrayal trauma. Some of these, the steps here are actually very similar to what we do in betrayal trauma work. However, you're also working with the alternate identities in this as well.
So
phase three involves identity integration and cooperation. During this phase, individuals make further gains in therapy by establishing a solid and stable sense of self and how they relate to other people in the outside world. And they have successfully made additional gains in internal cooperation, coordinated functioning, and integration of the alternate identities. The fragmented alternate identities at this point are going to act more cohesively, at least that's the goal and the hope, and people are experience a sense of calm, resilience, internal peace, and focus less on the past traumatic events. During this phase of treatment, people actually pour their energy into living their best life in the present moment, and with a more integrated sense of self, they're better able to look back and differentiate between trauma memories that are real or the ones that seemed real at the time but did not actually occur in objective reality. And to clarify this, sometimes, not always, but sometimes alternate identities have a memory of a trauma that actually never occurred in the person's life. Does that make sense? So an important part is going to be differentiating those.
Well, no, now say that one more time. So what I thought I heard you saying is that there may be something that they believe or remember that didn't actually occur?
Correct. The alternate identity could potentially. And that has to be kind of combed out as you work and process in therapy.
Okay. That makes sense. It definitely does.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to be laser focused on substantiating what's occurring for our client. Would you not agree? Yeah.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Yeah. Certainly do. I'm sorry, what did you say?
I'm thinking, can these clients lead a normal life? It seems like they've been through so much. And are they able to focus and to lead that normal life?
Absolutely. People with DID go on to have successful careers, marriages. They go on to have children. Now, treatment might include long-term individual therapy, couples therapy, family therapy, or even inpatient treatment. However, people who are committed to the process and working with skilled therapists well-versed in the treatment of DID, they can make gigantic strides in their ability to regulate their emotions, learn to think more positively, have happier relationships, and develop internal cooperation between the alternate identities. Now, internal cooperation means that the person is comfortable with their alternate identities, and they all develop a working relationship with each other.
Okay. Well, that certainly does make sense. I'm glad to hear that it can lead a normal life. There are plenty of people with DID that, you know, have stellar professional lives. How about interpersonal?
Absolutely.
How do they do with relationship building? Especially, I'm thinking, okay, I get that, you know, even though they have DID, they may have a partner that is faithful and loyal and caring and loving, and that's fantastic. But for that small part of the population of partner betrayal that may have DID, you know, how do they cope with and move through the trauma of partner betrayal and not go into that, you know, adaptive / maladaptive coping mechanism and get to the other side?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think you're going to go back to phase one, right, in betrayal trauma therapy and also in the treatment of DID, right, where you're focusing on self-care, you're working on mindfulness, grounding, coping skills. You're continuing to use those things. And additionally, you know, sometimes group therapy can be contraindicated for people with who are experiencing DID. So we may need to be careful about putting them into a group, right? It's going to be on a case-by-case basis on what they are able to tolerate. But we want to think about what are the things that are supportive for that person, you know, and as you know, working with betrayed partners with DID or without DID, it's going to be an individualized treatment on what they're able to tolerate and what's comfortable for them. Does that make sense?
100%. Okay, so in kind of wrapping up what DID is and what it looks like, Can you share with me, how do people manage the symptoms of DID? I mean, what do they do when they need to go back to safety and stabilization? And what do they do when they actually have gotten to the restoration part of their journey and have stabilized?
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be important to identify triggers, okay? And we do the same thing in working with betrayal trauma. What are the triggers? And then we plan for either avoiding or coping with those triggers. People with DID, and this is the same thing with betrayal trauma, right? As you can see, there's a lot of similarities here. Are encouraged to use relaxation skills, engage in self-care, manage their time. Sometimes all of us have difficulty with managing time. Sometimes this is particularly difficulty with someone who experiences DID and loses a sense of time, right? So it's helping them learn to manage their time, get sufficient rest. Sleep is super important when you're in betrayal trauma recovery. It's super important for self-care in general, for anybody, and it's particularly important for people who have DID. Furthermore, they're going to make a plan for difficult times, right? And it's exactly this. I mean, it's the same thing we're doing when we're working with betrayal trauma, right? You're thinking about, oh my goodness, we've got holidays coming up. How are we going to deal with this? How am I going to cope with this? And they're going to develop ways that they can be emotionally and physically safe. And so in all of this, it's going to be super important that each person develop an awareness of their own emotional state and develop skills for coping with those big emotions and that tendency to go into fight, flight, or freeze, that experience. And then once we are to phase three, right, and we're living life more resilient, in a more resilient manner, you know, you're going to have internal cooperation, hopefully, between all the alternate identities, and you're going to be more accepting. You're not going to be pushing them away. And so you're going to be doing all of this stuff, but all those parts of yourself are going to be working together.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there is a type of therapy that is called parts therapy. And I don't want our listeners to think that therapy is appropriate for DID, because when you're working
right
with DID, you need a specialist in dissociative identity disorder. And parts therapy is very helpful for the normal client that does not disassociate. But I don't want you to think that that is the therapy for DID.
Right. Right.
So let me ask you, is there anything else you would tell our listening audience, which are partners and some sex addicts and, of course, clinicians and coaches?
I think the one thing I really like to, I like to think about this myself, and I really like to remind my clients of this. Whatever you are feeling today, as you are listening to this, whatever you're experiencing in your life, it's not necessarily going to be like this tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. And so I just encourage people to hang on, engage in self-care, get the rest that you need, really take care of yourself, because as adults, nobody else is going to do that for us, right? We have to put ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to live your life in the best way you can, and know that every day is going to be a little bit different for you.
Yes. Well, Rebecca Ray, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. And And again, if I have listeners that have some questions for you or wonder if they could work with you, they can go to www.rayfamilytherapy.com. Are there other ways that they can reach you?
Sure, they can reach me by phone or email as well. My phone number, do you want me to list that here, or are you going to put that in?
Nope, it's all about you. Go ahead and list that.
All right. So if you want to reach me by phone, my phone number is 281-766-3376. I do want to remind people that I'm not an emergency line. So if it is an emergency, don't call me. Call 911. And then I do have an email address where people can reach me, and that's Rebecca with two C's at rayfamilytherapy.com.
Well, you have just been a wealth of knowledge, Rebecca. So thank you so much for sharing the idea. And come back soon and share some more.
All right. Thank you so much, Carol. Have a great rest of your day.
Okay, you too. Again, that was Rebecca Bray talking about, what a name. Isn't that a good name? She should be a talk show host, Rebecca Ray. Appreciate her wisdom, and I so appreciate you. And if any part of this rang true, go to appsats.org and look for a clinician, a specialist in your area that can help you with some of these symptoms. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Make it a good one.
Go to appsats.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.